So we continue with the 17th chapter. We discussed the introduction. Arjuna is asking, what is the faith of those? What is the destination? What is the status of those who have faith but not in scripture? And Krishna answers by telling that their faith will be in the three modes, and where their faith will be determined by swabhavaja. So we discussed about nature, nurture and culture. And now, of course, choice and grace also are the other factors that we discussed. Now Krishna will describe further how the person's faith is. See, here when he is talking about, when he will talk about looking at the people's austerities, food, sacrifices, he's saying this is the way we can understand where their faith is presently. But then after that, if we are doing activities in passion, by doing austerities in goodness, we can move upwards also. So implied that upward direction, upward recommendation is there. But right now he is talking about the concept of faith. Sattvanurupa sarvasya, sarvasya, shraddha bhavati bharata, shraddha bhavati bharata, shraddha mayoyam purusho, shraddha mayoyam purusho, yoyat shraddha sa eva saha, yoyat shraddha sa eva saha. So sattvanurupa sarvasya, so sattvanurupa, sattva, as a sattva, actually the word sattva has two meanings. One is goodness and the other is existence itself. Yavat sanjayate kinchit sattvam sthavara jangama. In 13.28 Krishna talks about whatever is existing, that is sthavara or jangama, that is sattva the word uses. So sattvanurupa sarvasya shraddha bhavati bharata. So according to one's existence, one's faith is. So that's what Krishna is telling in that. So in a sense, as you live, so you believe. So as you live, so you believe. Our lifestyles shape our beliefs. And accordingly, our beliefs also shape our lifestyles. Our lifestyles shape our beliefs means that... Where are we? Let's go off here. You know, for example, if people go from one cultural environment, they go from one cultural environment to another, then their lifestyle changes, and accordingly, their inner beliefs also change. Not visible? It's visible, no? As we live, so we believe. Sattvanurupa sarvasya shraddha bhavati bharata. Sattvanurupa, as we live, as is our existence, shraddha bhavati, so becomes our belief. That means, if we come and live in the association of devotees and live devotionally, our beliefs will become devotional. If we live in the association of materialistic people, our beliefs will become materialistic. So, this is talking about the role of culture. Sattvanurupa sarvasya shraddha bhavati bharata. And then so much for is now shraddha mayoyam purusha. Actually, the shraddha maya. Maya means made up of. Anand mayo abhyasat is used to refer to the absolute truth. It's filled with ananda. Shraddha mayoyam purusha. So actually the purusha, the living being, is simply shraddha maya. So Krishna is not using the word Shraddhavan over here. He is using Shraddhamaya. Shraddhanavan means possessor of dhana. So like that, Shraddhavan will be possessor of Shraddha. But actually possession means I am here and I possess something. Possession is something external to us. But Shraddhamayo means I am made of Shraddha. So in a sense, actually we are nothing but our faith. Every one of us has certain beliefs. Even materialistic people have their beliefs. Even atheistic people have their beliefs. You know, everybody. So what is Krishna telling? We are nothing but our beliefs, in a sense. Our beliefs make us, because beliefs are the substratum based on which we see everything else. So even atheists are believers. But they are, even atheists are believers. They are believers in the non-existence of God. So atheists are actually, they are following the religion of faith in faithlessness. Faith in faithlessness. That means they say there is no God, godlessness, but they have faith in that. So Shraddha Mayoyam Purusha, every one of us is nothing but our beliefs. Yoyach Shraddha Sa Evasa. Now Krishna is talking about a loop over here. So how do you draw a loop over here? Insert. Smart art of shapes. A sort of circular loop. Smart art. Sorry? Anyway. Basically what I want to show is the way we live shapes our beliefs. And the way we believe, that shapes our life. So our lives shape our beliefs and our beliefs shape our lives. So I just want to show a cumulative circle between the two. So we can have two in that. How do we? Okay, anyway, I got this, I think. Quickly. So, Krishna is telling, our beliefs shape our lifestyles, and our lifestyles shape our beliefs. Sattvanurupa sarvasya shraddha bhavati bharata. So, actually, you can maybe put it this way, so that, start with here. Sattvanurupa sarvasya. Sattvanurupa is our lifestyle, the way we exist. Okay, yeah, that's okay. So the way we live, that shapes our beliefs. And as we live, according Sattvanurupa sarvasa shraddha bhavati bharata, shraddha mayoyam purusha yoyach shraddha sa evasa. So as is your shraddha, so you become. Yoyach shraddha sa evasa. The last part is talking about beliefs to lifestyle, is talked about in the 17.3D. And lifestyle to belief is talked about in 17.3A. Sattvanurupa sarvasya shraddha bhavati bharata. So this is how actually these two contribute to each other. And that's why people who try to believe in God and become sort of religious without adopting a culture which is conducive to the religiousness, that their faith doesn't become very strong. Because the two are mutually dependent on each other. They are symbiotic. Any questions, you can feel free to ask. Now Krishna will talk about, he will give about a broad classification of faith. How do you know what a person's faith is? Look at whom that person worships. Vijante Satvika Devan. Yaksharaksham Sirajasaha. Yaksharaksham Sirajasaha. Pretan Bhuta Ganam Shanye. Ganam Shanye. Yajante Tamasa Janaha. So, Yajante Satvika Devan. So, the Deva, those who are in goodness, they worship the demigods. Then, Yaksha Rakshamsi Rajasaha. Those who are in passion, they worship the Yakshas and Rakshasas. And then beyond that, so you remember I talked about goodness, passion and goodness ignorance. So MG is worship of Devas. MG is goodness. And within MG, you have MG. MG is mode of goodness. So MG MI is Shiva. Then you have MGMP is who? Yeah, in goodness, passion. Then you have goodness is Vishnu, correct. Then that means within goodness there are subdivisions. So there has to be a basic platform of goodness by which only people will worship the devatas, otherwise they will not worship. Then when somebody is just entirely in passion, then what happens? Vijante sattvika devam yaksha rakshamsi rajasam. So yakshas and rakshasas. So now are the yakshas demigods? Not exactly. The yakshas are beings who are somewhat more powerful than human beings. And that is why when Dhruva Maharaj goes and defeats the yakshas, that's considered to be a very heroic feat. Although because he got angry, he killed too many rakshasas, then the Kubera and Swayambhu Manu, they all came and stopped him. And they said, don't get so violent. But the fact that he killed them indicated they are much more powerful than human beings. See, Kubera is the head of the yakshas. But the yakshas are not considered demigod. Just like Yamaraj is a demigod, but Yamadutas are not considered demigods. Similarly, yakshas are not considered to be demigods. They are more powerful human beings, more powerful beings, just as Yamadutas are also powerful beings. Sorry? Ganpati worship, in what, which mode it is? It is generally in the lower modes. Is it passion or ignorance? Generally it's passion, and sometimes it may be ignorance. The idea is, what are the rituals that are performed primarily in that worship? See, Lord Shiva's worship, often there is this bhanga drinking, and then there is ashes smearing and all such things, which characterize it as in the mode of ignorance. Now, most of the Ganesh worship that is performed nowadays, now that was institutionalized during the time of India's political struggles. In 1920s, 1930s, Bal Gangadhar Tilak was the primary person who institutionalized it and became quite popular thereafter. So, it may have some basis in tradition, but we will have to see how the worship is done. See, again, we have to understand that it's not that as soon as I choose a particular deity, automatically my worship becomes in goodness. In one sense, Dhruva Maharaj, when he went to Lord Vishnu, he was himself in the mode of passion. Although he chose a deity that was in goodness, whose worship is normally done in the mode of goodness, but he himself was in the mode of passion. So things we cannot just superimpose any typology directly on reality. Any typology is a system of classification. Typology is a framework for thinking and analyzing. But no typology can be directly imposed on reality. So it is also possible that there can be some worshippers of Lord Shiva who are in goodness. It's entirely possible. That means they themselves might be advanced and somehow for some reason they are attracted to the worship of Lord Shiva. But in general, the kind of rituals that are included in the worship of Lord Shiva, they are the kind of rituals which will attract people in the mode of ignorance. But that doesn't mean that everybody who is worshipping Lord Shiva has to be in the mode of ignorance. So this is something which you always have to be cautious about when you talk about typologies. Now, typologies cannot be imposed on reality without adequate discrimination. Clear? So now, pretan bhuta ganam shanye jante tamasa janaha. So, what is the difference between a preta and a bhuta? Pretas are forefathers. That is pitras, not petas. Yeah, that's okay. So, this, actually, okay, I will tell you something which will give you some bad dreams. So, actually, I have a full class on all these different kinds of vampires and pretas and bhutas and all these things. What are they actually? So, the Garuda Puran talks a lot about this. So, in traditional circles, you know, some child would become mischievous. They say, when you sleep, I will speak Garuda Puran to you while sleeping. And I said, no, don't speak that because I'll all get all bad dreams. So, the idea is, Garuda Puran talks elaborately about the journey of the soul when the soul goes from, leaves this body. Maybe I'll talk about it. Since the word preta is used over here. So, bhuta is what? Bhuta is soul plus subtle body without gross body. Isn't it? I think I should put it in a separate slide. So bhuta is soul plus subtle body without a gross body. Now preta is soul plus subtle body plus transition body, that is grosser than the subtle body and subtler than the gross body. So what happens is, when the soul leaves from this body, so when the soul goes out, the soul and subtle body go out. Now from here, when the soul is supposed to go to a next destination, how did that soul go to that next destination? There is a process. So for that journey, the soul is given a covering. And when the soul, along with the subtle body, with that covering that goes along, that is called as a preta. So now that covering, it is not the same as the gross body. The gross body the soul will get after this life's after the soul enters into the next womb and gets a new body. And it is not just a subtle body, it is grosser. So that is the preta. Now when this preta, when the soul dies, there are actually two paths by which the soul goes. You remember in the 8th chapter I talked about Devayan and Pitrayan. So let's put it this way. Person, then after that, on death, all people, the person becomes a preta. And then when the preta, after that, what is the post-death sacrifice is called? Shraddha, one more word for it. Pindadan. So there is whole Pindadan Kriya is done. So when the Pinda is done, basically the food that is offered to the particular ancestor, departed person. So the way the food is offered, it is said at a subtle level, that food contributes to the building of the next body of that particular departed descendant. It's not simplistic that you offer food and that builds, but the idea is the concept of sacrifice over here. In a subtle way that contributes. And when the Pindadan ritual is complete, then if the soul has gone by Pitrayan, then after, generally it is after 11 or 13 days depending on the Varana, the Preta will become a Pitra. So I'll repeat this. This is from the Garuda Puran primarily. So normally when a person dies, the person becomes a Preta. Then when the Pindadan Kriya is performed properly for that, by the Pindadan Kriya, that person's journey to the next world is facilitated. When the Pindadan Kriya is completed, at that time the Preta becomes a Pitra. That means he gets a next body in Pitra Loka, where that person becomes an ancestor. So that's how this journey takes place. Yeah. Okay, so what about those cultures in which the Pindadan Kriya is not performed? See, when the scriptures talk about one process, they do not necessarily bring in all the other factors that are involved. They just focus on that process and how that process brings the result. For example, Krishna may say that, Krishna says that, antakale cha mam, if you remember me, you will come back to me. Whatever you remember, you will attain that. That's the principle. And Krishna also says, sneha vikram swalpam apasitna trayate mahato bhayat. You remember I talked about these two principles overlapping. If we practice spiritual life, we will never go down to a non-human species. But then, Bharat Maharaj practiced spiritual life, still he went down to the non-human species. Why is that? Because there are two principles over there. One principle is, the fruits of spiritual life are eternal. The other principle is that, whatever we are attached to, that we will attain. So then both those principles were reconciled so that his spiritual inclinations were retained, but he also got a body which is lower. So he got a deer's body but not deer's consciousness. So when the scriptures talk about certain rituals, they don't consider other complications. But when the other factors are there, they will shape things accordingly. It is not that it is just because of these rituals that the person attains Pitraloka. This is one thing, these sort of rituals are recommended for the descendants of that departed person so that they will stick to dharma and by that they will also acquire some punya. But it is not that if a person has done papa throughout his life, just because somebody does pindadan, by that time the person automatically goes to pitraloka. It doesn't work like that. So this is one part of the set of activities which takes a person to a particular realm. So now if a person has done the adequate punya by which the person will go to pitraloka, then that punya means punya. Punya is not something which is concept is not related to Vedic culture. And even other people in other religions, people who are just having mundane piety, they can also do punya. So it is primarily by their punya that they go to a higher loka, and these rituals that are performed, they assist in the transition. Just like when a person is, now let's talk about it from a more familiar perspective. This is all the karmakandi or punya perspective. Let's talk from the bhakti perspective. When a Vaishnava is about to depart from the world, we will facilitate the transition by having kirtans, by providing the Mahagarland, Mahatulsi, by having pictures of Krishna around that person. We will try to help that person to remember, and that will definitely play a role. But more important than all that will be how that person has lived throughout his or her life. So along with that, along with living a devotional life, towards the end of the life, others also help that person in going through that journey, making the transition as smooth and as successful as possible. So this aspect of creating a conducive culture is what we see as our responsibility. Now we should do that as a service to the devotee. But if we don't do that, does that mean that that person will not go to the destination? If that person is a pure devotee or advanced devotee, now even if that person dies in an accident, that person dies in a prison, that person dies in a terrorist attack, you know, if that person has lived a life of devotion, then accordingly they will attain that destination. Is it clear? So support systems are more a aid, but they are not the determinant of the post-death destination. And support systems are more for others to fulfill their obligations. Clear now? So, pretan bhutaganam shanye jante tamasa jana. So, pretas and bhutas are worshipped by the dozen tamoguna. Now, today when we see the word bhutaganams, so this can literally refer to bhut. The word bhuta has two meanings. What are the two meanings of bhutas? Generally living entities, and it can also refer to specifically the ghostly beings. So when Krishna says bhutaganams, he says all kinds of ghostly beings are included in that. But it can also refer to all other ordinary human beings. So that means, many times people make sort of temples of film stars and politicians and such things. All these are in the tamoguna. All these are bhutaganam shanye yante tamasajana. People may even worship sports stars. You know, that is all, it's all tamasic. Why is it? Now the rituals may not be tamasic. You know, it is, see, the Indian mind has such a, the Prabhupada said spiritual substance flows in the body of Indians. So the Indian mind has such a propensity to worship that they will indiscriminately worship anything and anyone. So when India had won the World Cup, you know, there was this Sachin Tendulkar, they had made a Virat Roop of Sachin Tendulkar. And that was a cover page of an article, you know. And the idea, it was such a combination of creativity and perversity. You know, creativity in terms of using the imagination and perversity in terms of distorting the principle. So what they had shown was, all the other, how many teams participated in World Cup? 12 or 16, whatever. So they had shown the Sachin Tendulkar with 16 mouths, and the captains of all the 16 countries are going into his mouth. And then below they had written something like that you are the best cricketer. So you know there's this word prayer, Tomeva Mata Chapita Tomeva Tomeva. So it was like Tomeva Vivian Richards, Tomeva Brian Lara, Tomeva this, Tomeva that, like that. So all this is Pretan Bhutakram Chane Jante Tamasa Jana. It's all worship in the mode of ignorance. So the ignorance may not be specifically in the rituals, but it's in the underlying conceptions that are motivating this. So now Prabhupada talks about Panchopasana over here. The impersonalists are supposed to be situated in the mode of goodness, and they worship five kinds of demigods. So Panchopasana is a concept which was started by Shankaracharya primarily, and he tried to unify Hinduism in its fight against Buddhism. So what he did was, he found that So who are the five beings that are worshipped? Ganesh, Surya, Vishnu is the last, then Shiva, Durga, Shakti. So these are five deities that they worship. Sorry? So Ganapatyas, Shauryas, Shaivites, then Shaktas and Vaishnavas. These are the five. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in one of his books, I think Chaitanya Shikshamrit, he gives a very interesting hierarchy of these worships in the forms of, in the conception of how these are progressive. So he explains that Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaking. Shakta, Shaurya, San. Okay, fine. Yeah. So this is the hierarchy. So what he says is, when people live in nature, the first thing they observe is that actually nature is more powerful than me. They understand that in nature there can be thunderbolts, there can be storms, there can be hurricanes, and I am vulnerable to the powers of nature. So at that time, they personify nature and they start worshipping nature. So he says that Shaktas are basically nature worshippers. They basically recognize that nature is extremely powerful and they start worshipping nature. And to a large extent, scientists will fall in this category. Because scientists also deify. Deify means to make into a deity. They deify nature. The whole theory of evolution is natural selection. It makes nature itself into a god. So, in a sense, they are Shaktas. So, they may not be worshipping Shakti or Kali. But the level of consciousness that prompts people to worship nature as if it's divine, that is the level of consciousness that is also characterized by amongst many scientists. Now, after that, when they observe, yes, nature is extremely powerful, but they observe that actually in nature there are animals. And these animals are very ferocious, they are very powerful. So, therefore, they start conceiving that nature is supervised by some kind of animal beings. And then that leads to the level of worship that corresponds with Ganapatyas. So this he calls as zoomorphism. So zoology is study of animals. So zoomorphism is, anthropomorphism is to conceive of God in a human form. So zoomorphism is to conceive of God in an animal form. Then after that, they move further and they say, okay, we can look at nature, we can look at the powerful creatures that are in nature. But ultimately nature and all the creatures within nature, they are sustained by an energy. And the source of the energy is the sun. So, then they rise to the level of Shauryas. What is the word? Shauryas or... it works like this. The hierarchy is like this. So, what happens is, first, they see that nature is animated by certain energy. Nature would be useless without energy. So, they start worshipping the energy. And then they think, okay, this is energy, is okay, a storm may cause destruction. The storm is basically activated because of certain presence of energy. And the energies in this planet, in this universe, practically come from the sun. So they see, consider the sun as the object of worship. And then at this stage, still it is the object of worship is conceived more in material, in terms of material elements. Then after that they think, supervising nature and energy is an animal-like being. Is a being conceived in animal form. So that time, the Ganapatya worship comes up. Beyond all temporary matter is eternal spirit. So there they understand that. So the Shaiva worship is actually a form of impersonalistic worship. So this is, that's why, you know, among Shaivites they always have this concept, Jiv Shiv ek ho jate hai. That is their idea. So this is generally the Shaivite worship is almost always impersonalist. Very, very few Shaivites are actually personalists. And then beyond that, the worship of Vishnu, this is not transcendental worship. As a Prabhupada uses the word here, philosophized Vishnu. See here, they worship the impersonal Vishnu form in the material world, which is known as the philosophized Vishnu. So I'll explain what philosophized Vishnu means. This Vishnu idea is the conception of a human-like being controlling all of existence. So now they don't conceive of this being as transcendental to material existence. They consider, okay, he's in control, but he's also part of material existence. I hope the difference between pure Vaishnavism and this form of philosophized Vaishnavism is clear. In the pure Vaishnavism, we understand clearly that Lord Vishnu is beyond, he's transcendental. But here they think, no, he's not transcendental, he is in the material world itself, but in the control of the material world. And beyond So basically he says, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that all forms of worship which are there in the world, they will fall in these five categories broadly. So they may not necessarily, the Native Americans, they may be worship the, they may be Aztecs and Mayans who worship the sun god, or they may worship fire. Now, they may not self-identify themselves as Shaktas or Shauryas or whatever. But if we look at the level of consciousness that they have and the conceptions that they have, they'll fall in one of these categories. Now, beyond these five kinds of worship, ultimately there is transcendental Vaishnavism, which goes beyond the body. And that is the highest of all forms of worship. So any questions about this? Let's move forward. Yeah. If Shankaracharya was an impersonalist, how did he use these five conceptions? See, you remember yesterday I said how scripture or scriptural tradition is like a mirror. So, in general, within the Vedic scriptures, there are certain kind of rituals which are given, many kinds of rituals are given. But different rituals are for people of different mentalities. So Shankaracharya observed that the among the various kinds of worship that are going on, these five are prominent. What was existing in society at that time, and also what was also given in the scriptures. So he emphasized these, and based on these, he united all the people who were followers of Vedic culture. Now, when Shankaracharya talked about this, he has not talked about this hierarchy. This hierarchy has been talked by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Now, that doesn't mean that it is not based in scripture. It is implicit in scripture. In the sense that, if we look at the conceptions that people have, we can see that there is an evolution in the thought that is happening over there. So, Shankaracharya, in his Panchopasana, doesn't conceive of the Panchopasana like that. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's explanation of how Panchopasana can gradually elevate people and how various forms of worship all over the world form a hierarchy that ultimately culminates in transcendental Vaishnavism. Shankaracharya basically, his idea is that these five are the prominent forms of the impersonal Brahman that can be worshipped. So his conception is different. It's like the same terms are there, but they will be invested with different meanings by different people. So, Shankaracharya, according to the philosophy that he has used, he's not talking about... So, maybe I'll clarify this. This is a good point. So, Panchopasana as explained by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Or more specifically, how Panchopasana elevates. So this is how what we are talking about over here. Is it clear now? Any other questions? If people don't chant but do deity worship and they do it ritualistically, will it be considered transcendental? No, not necessarily transcendental. It will be conducive to transcendence. Because why is it conducive to transcendence? Because they have come to the right goal. They may not yet got the right means, but they have come to the right goal. So I'll talk about one more aspect over here. Now in my Ishopanishad classes, did I talk about Christianity and Islam? I've talked a little bit, or I didn't talk much about those religions. No, how those religions are primarily in the mode of passion and ignorance, and the quote of Prabhupada about how this religion is a particular conception. No? Okay, how many of you were there in the Brahmacharya classes I took on world religions? Okay, there I spoke. Okay, I'll speak briefly about that. Here. So first, now you know that well-known statement of Prabhupada, which is quoted even in the Lilavaratu, that Prabhupada said that even why Shakta is better than a Christian, why a demigod worshipper is better than a Christian. What was Prabhupada's answer? He's in the house of the Vedas. So what does this mean? This essentially means that he has less cultural and conceptual barriers to cross for attaining Vishnu worship. So what does this mean? I'll explain this point. Cultural barriers. Cultural barriers means that people who are outside the Vedic tradition, they have a very different culture quite often. And because of that, the transition from one culture to another it requires a lot of reorientation. For example, you know, in the Vedic tradition, almost anybody who's in the Vedic tradition, they worship deity, respect cows, respect Vedas. There's no cultural barrier because they're already respected. And no conceptual barrier because we see this as a part of one's own tradition. You know, in general, if a person is a Christian and that person wants to become a Vaishnava, the amount of reorientation that is acquired is much, much greater than somebody you say who is a Shaivite and that person wants to become a Vaishnava. Because overall, it's like the same framework is there. The way of thinking which is taught in the Abrahamic religions about God, often that is quite different. And one of the biggest differences is the idea this is the only way. This is the only way. Now, whichever religion, whichever form of worship people may follow, even if people are following Shaivism or Shaktism or whatever, no religion, no Vedic path reaches this is the only way. It may say this is the highest way. But it never said that this is the only way. So that exclusivist mentality is foreign to the Vedic mindset. And that's why conceptually it's much easier for people to embrace the Vedic philosophy, the Vaishnava philosophy, if they are already in the house of the Vedas. Otherwise, it becomes more difficult. So now, Ajante Satvika Devan, saying that those who worship the Devatas, they are in the mode of goodness. So, in a broad way, if you look, what does the word Veda mean? The Veda means knowledge. In a more extremely restricted way, the word Veda means the four Vedas. In a intermediate way, it means revealed knowledge. So, in a sense, we could say all scriptures are Veda. So, we could say in that sense, even Bible and Quran are Veda. At the same time, they don't contain the depth and the exhaustiveness of the revelation that is there over here. And that's why we will see that in the pastime of Chand Kazi being delivered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there are a lot of strong statements which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu makes. He says that your path is kalpita. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is talking with Chand Kazi, and Chand Kazi says that, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asks, why do you kill cows? Cows are like your mother. So then he says that actually in our Quran that is allowed, and in your scriptures also it is allowed to kill cows in Gomed. He says no, that is only under regulation. And then he said that how those cows were revived, and now because they cannot do it, that should be prohibited now. But then, so he says, तुम्हारे जीयते नारा वध मात्र सार नरके होइते तुम्हार नाही कनिस्तार. He said नरके होइते तुम्हार, because you cannot bring cow back to life, therefore you are going to go to hell. And then he says cow killers are condemned. Now this is very sign. तुम्हार सबार शास्त्र करता से ह भ्रांत हैल न जानी शास्त्रेर मर्म आइछे अज्ञा दील. So he says there are many mistakes and illusions in your scriptures, and their compilers, not knowing the essence of logic, gave orders that were against reason and argument. And then he became silent, and then Prabhupada talks about it over here. He says that similarly, from a scientific point of view, the answers of the Old Testament, New Testament and Quran to many questions have changed, but a Shastra cannot change at a person's whim. Shastra must be free from four defects. And then Prabhupada says that the scriptures of the Yavanas are three: the Old Testament, the New Testament and the Quran. Their compilation has a history. They are not eternal like the Vedic knowledge. Therefore, although they have their arguments and reasonings, they are not very sound and transcendental. As such, modern people, advanced in science and philosophy, deem these scriptures unacceptable. So it's a very strong purport. But what Prabhupada is saying over here is, first is, they are not eternal. They are not transcendental. They have originated at a particular time in history. And to the extent that they contain principles about God consciousness, to that extent they are good. We are not saying that they are bad. And you are not certainly saying that they are false. But they are not flawless. They have mistakes. So they are not transcendental, they are not eternal, and they are not. They may have some mistakes in terms of reasoning and other things. So, now, after talking about this, there is a... This is Satsarup Maharaj. He, while preaching in America, he asked Prabhupada a question about how they should preach to Christians. And there Prabhupada gives a very interesting answer. Yeah. Would someone like to read this? Instead of exactly quoting, who would like is cautious, you know, he names Christianity but doesn't name Islam. Yeah.
As we see another religious principle, there is instruction that is called, you shall not cohabit with your mother. So we have to judge such societies where there are murders and those having sex life with their mothers. Now what kind of men they are? In the Bhagavad Gita, the religious principles are divided into three categories: in the modes of passion,
Yeah.
Generally, all sober principles are in the mode of action and ignorance. Maybe these are some moral instructions, but moral instructions without God consciousness is impossible. In another place, a gentleman quotes one book written by Professor Charles Smith. The book's name is The Paradox of Jesus in the Gospel. In this book, it is admitted that all statements in the Bible are not directly spoken. Some of them are staged through the mouth of Jesus Christ. And specifically this passage, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes unto the Father but by me. This gentleman admits that it is put into the mouth of Jesus because that is the literally convention of the author of the
fourth gospel. So there are four gospels, so he's talking about the fourth gospel over here. That's good. And then Prabhupada says that this has not been told about our acharyas anywhere. No authorized acharya has ever commented that this word was put into the mouth of Krishna by Vyasadeva, Sanjay or any other person. So, now very important point. The Prabhupada is saying that, I'm explaining that. That basically, there are many passages in the Bible that have been interpolated. I mean, they were not originally there, but later on they have been added. Prabhupada is talking about that is a literary convention. That means, see, in general, one of the biggest problems with either the Bible or the Quran is that the book was written far, far after that was spoken. Long, long time afterwards. Now, Jesus, when he spoke, his followers thought maybe he's a great person in some way. But they did not recognize him to be a Messiah in any way. So, and after he was crucified, they were all shattered. Then eventually, later on when he was resurrected, then they started galvanizing their faith. And then they started reaching out to others. And then, after a long, long time, they started writing down what he taught. So during this transition, what originally Jesus had spoken, what his audience had heard, and what was written down in the books, there are gaps that have been come into that. Similarly, what Muhammad spoke. Muhammad got the revelation of the Quran at different times. Now he would just, it would say that Gabriel, the archangel would appear to him and would tell him, write. Now Muhammad didn't know how to write. So he would just start speaking. He would start speaking and then somebody else would write it down for him. And then like that, he from the age of 40 till the time he died, he got revelations. And those, whoever was present, they would write the revelations down. Then almost like 30-40 years after he died, then those revelations were compiled together and they were made into what is called as the Quran. So now what happened during these 40 years is difficult to say. And not only that, even before when Muhammad was there at one particular time, he said, okay, now the spirit speaks through me. The God is speaking through me, write down. So when he started writing down, he wrote down. And at that time what he wrote is, Islam is aggressively monotheistic. Monotheistic means one God, and aggressively monotheistic means only one God. And all other gods should be demolished, should be destroyed. So, at that particular time, Muhammad, he was getting some followers. At the same time, he was also stirring some opposition. So, he was trying to do some reconciliation. And he was saying that, you can worship other gods also, but Allah should be considered the highest God. So there was some discussion going on between him and the local authorities over there. You know that he was originally speaking in Mecca, and then when the ruling authorities over Mecca started persecuting, then he left from Mecca to Medina. And it was Medina where he became powerful. Later on, when he came back with his army, he conquered Mecca without a war. And that's how Islam started spreading. So when he was in Mecca at that time, he spoke a surah which said to the effect that you can worship some other gods also, but Allah should be considered the highest. And after hearing this, the authorities who were there, rather than they becoming conciliatory, they said, just see, he is contradicting himself. First he said, you should worship only Allah. Now he's saying other gods can also be worshipped. And then when this after that revelation came about, then Muhammad, he said, I realized that was not the voice of God that was speaking. That was the voice of Shaitan that was speaking. So those were satanic verses. they were not divine verses, and you should remove them from the Quran. So now, taking this as the center story, Salman Rushdie has written that book, a novel called Satanic Verses. So, and that became a controversial novel, which was because of which the novel was banned and a fatwa was made against him, and then he had to live in hiding for most of his life. But the point here is that even Muhammad himself, he did say at a particular point that sometimes it was the shaitan who spoke through him, or the Satan who spoke through him. So that's why what Srila Prabhupada is saying is there are possibilities of interpolations. Now somebody may argue, oh, there is possibility of interpolation in your scriptures also. You may argue like that. So Prabhupada says, okay, that's where Prabhupada's important point is, as we discussed earlier, the Bhagavad Gita core has not been changed for thousands of years at least, we know. And anyway, apart from that, Prabhupada gives different points. He says, look at the standard of the teachings itself. Now, the teachings that are required, thou shalt not have sex with your mother. That is definitely not a very elevated teaching. So, let's look at what all Prabhupada is saying over here from these different points of view. Then we'll continue this tomorrow. We're just summarizing this. So, problems with non-vedic scriptures. Prabhupada says, not eternal, revealed at, they appeared at, what is the word Prabhupada uses? Does anyone remember? Yeah. Exact word I would like to see. Yeah, but he uses the word. Chapter only? Yeah. Fashioned recently. So, fashioned recently. Prabhupada used the word fashion. Then he says, not transcendental. So, what is the difference between eternal and transcendental? Eternal means that which exists forever. Transcendental means that which is beyond matter. So matter itself is also eternal, but matter is not transcendental. Then he says, not having sound arguments and reasoning. I say that not very sound, not transcendental. Then these three are from CC 17 Adi, and then there he says there are interpolations, and then he says level of teachings not very high. What is the date? Now, one very important point is after this. Very important. Now, please be very careful about this. Now, we should not think that now I have got a weapon to bash all Muslims and Christians. You know, your scriptures are not transcendental, not eternal, this, no class. No. I give you all these hints not for general discussion, but for your personal understanding to know the respective positions of different types of religious principles. Ours is transcendental because we are not very much concerned with the minor moral or immoral principles. Although each and every devotee is a first-class moralist. But our religious principles, our natural occupational duty is to learn how to love Krishna. We are practicing this and we are teaching this. So let us very steadily stick to our principles and our movement will surely come out successful. So our goal is not to bash other religions. Now our goal, if we just present Krishna consciousness in a coherent and a attractive way, people will become attracted. So he doesn't say that you go about and criticize others. We just stick to our principles and we'll attract others. But for our education, we can understand this. So we are talking about this here because in a broad sense, there is the understanding of revelation, even in these other religions. But if you look at the content of their teachings, this content is not very elevated. And beyond that also, what Srila Prabhupada refers to elsewhere is, there is no detailed knowledge about God or His kingdom. You know, I gave a class on East or West Krishna Consciousness, the best. So there I talk about this very elaborately, how Sambandha, Avideya, Prayojan, all three are best are revealed in the Vedic tradition. So there are other aspects also. That is Sambandha, Avideya and Prayojan are not clearly described. So that's why we focus on practicing Krishna consciousness ourselves and sharing Krishna consciousness with others. But that doesn't mean we disrespect other religions. We focus on sharing Krishna consciousness with others and encouraging them according to their level of consciousness. So if you have any questions, we'll discuss tomorrow. It's already the lower time. Please note down your question. I think you'll have. I also want to speak a few more things about how we should interact with people of other religions if we meet them. But we'll continue tomorrow. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktavinda ki jai. Itai Gaur Pramana.